We are going to open up a work session on House Bill 5166 relating to computing and network infrastructure consolidation. Good morning, Dallas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You remember various discussions and hearings with the Department of Administrative Services and other agencies. We took money out of that department's budget. We were going to do the data center consolidation in a separate bill. House Bill 5166 would be that bill. You have your staff recommendations, and I'll go through them briefly for you. The first is to approve other funds limitation for the computing and networking infrastructure consolidation of $100,297,264. This is for the 05-07 biennium. It should be pointed out that $62 million of this is already in other agency budgets, and the balance of $38 million is from the one-time certificates of participation. The second one is to approve the establishment of 74 limited duration positions, which is 25.5 FTE estimated, for staffing during the consolidation of the agency's infrastructure. These will be limited duration positions that the authority to create them is necessary so that when they move and temporarily put people in the facility to transition an agency, they're put in there and funded and paid out of that transition money. And then once the consolidation of that agency is completed, those positions are then returned to the agencies or moved into permanent positions. So that's why they're limited duration positions. Then we are recommending the establishment of 93 permanent positions to staff the data center once the consolidation efforts are completed. And these will be phased in during as the consolidation happens. Number four is approve the phase out of 155 positions in 12 different agencies. As the infrastructure consolidation is completed, the positions by agency are listed there. These have been identified. The budget report will reflect all of it in the position numbers, but these will be phased out as the agencies are formally moved in, finalized, so we'll be dropping 155 permanent positions. My fifth recommendation is this.
On the 155 positions, are those 155 FTE?
At this point, they are. They're not FTE. No. The phase out would be less than that because they're not all. We don't know the exact number of FTE. It would depend on the timing of when the position is phased out. If they're phased out, say, 10 of them are phased out on January 1st, that would be like 7.5 FTE, but the position authority would be phased out.
Got it.
And some, will phase out and will transition later. So,
just so I'm clear on that, and for the record, so it's not just FTE, but it's also positions that may be currently in the budget and not filled yet.
Or they are filled, yes.
Or filled. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
These are positions that will disappear because of they'll either. They won't be needed because in those various agencies.
Okay.
Then here's what we will be transferring expenditure authority that will be in those various agency budgets. A certain amount of that $62 million is personal services, a certain amount, yet undetermined yet because of the timing, will be other services and supplies related to those people. So we will be needing approval to transfer expenditure authority from personal services to services and supplies so that they can take that money and then pay it to the data center for the services. It's just an internal transfer in the agency's budgets. As I mentioned, the funding will come from two sources, transfers, payments from the agencies in amounts of $62 million, and then certificates of participation, which will be repaid and finally paid off in the year 2011. You've heard any number of presentations on this. You know the rationale, the previous legislative history for this, approved conceptually in the 03 session, and then during the emergency board, JLCIMT, during the last interim, and we approved funding and the project moving forward. And even early on in this session, we provided additional limitation in House Bill 5068 for them to start the implementation of the transition. And so the legislature has been involved throughout this. Right now, there is a we have the House chairs in the recommendation said we need to be assured that there will be continued legislative oversight and involvement. There is a budget note being drafted, and if it's approved could be inserted in the budget report, directing the department to return to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and the Emergency Board with reports on the status. And we will track those against the commitments made here as to timelines, agencies involved, and the like. So,
I know this isn't, everyone doesn't have a copy of this. Is this the budget note?
You have before you a budget note that was drafted for Representative Dallum. We have not received approval yet from the chairs on the budget note. It's pretty much like another one that has been
assigned. Representative Dallum just walked in.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
So,
Representative Dallum, come on up.
Why don't we
have you come on up here and introduce yourself for the record. We're right at the point in this discussion where we want to make sure that there's legislative oversight over this project. And Dallas was sharing with us that there's a budget note that we should be anticipating.
And let me talk to you about the budget note, if I need to. Would you give that to the administrator? The budget note is here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to visit with you today. I've come to talk to you about the Computing and Network Infrastructure Consolidation, CNIC. I have to say that I have spent the entire session reviewing principally CNIC, but certainly other areas. And the issue is, in my mind...
Mr. Chair, could you identify yourself really quick for the record?
Thank you, sir. Representative John Dallum, Chairman of Information Management and Technology Committee. I want to give you a brief history so that you understand exactly where I am and what this process has been through. And I think I want to tell you about CNIC. I want to tell you about legislative confidence in the project. I want to give you a brief history. And I want to offer up a course of action that several of us have been working on and I think we've got put together. I have reviewed many documents, started all the way back from December of 1996. Teresa McHugh from the governor's office now explained after the ODOT process, and she was given the charge of putting that back together, that one of the most important components was that each partner in the process feel as though they're a partner and that they're fully informed and that they're a participant. It was that document that drove the discussions and that I held and drove my review of other documents. I think there's some 64 of them all in all. I'll tell you that our committee asked very early on in the process for two things. We wanted a project timeline. In other words, how are things going to happen? How are they going to unfold? And perhaps we had what we wanted to do was be able to look at that document and say, this is day 31. We should be moving computers this far, and this is how we'll do it. The notion was, at least when in talking with my colleagues, was that we could look at the document and see if we were on schedule or off schedule. If we were on schedule, that was going to be great. If we were ahead schedule, we were going to celebrate. And if we were behind schedule, then the question was not to beat somebody over the head, but to why are we behind? Is there a good reason? Is there things that this partner in the process should be doing? As principally the policy people, we wanted to monitor how our money was spent. We also asked for another thing. The principal justification, the principal one, a justification for CNIC has been cost savings. And so we asked very, very early in the process, and I believe several members of the committee were interested in seeing a savings figure over cost figure so we could determine a ratio and how's this going to pay out. Well, those documents didn't come. We went through February, March, and April. We did other things. We had the agency heads in. We learned about GIS. We learned a lot of things about information management. On May 25th, we got the business case. And I was privy to have a copy of the business case May 23rd or 24th. And I did go to an outside expert and ask them to look at that. Their statement about the business case was less than romantic. They were not plussed at all. In fact, the first 11 pages were identified as fluff. Then the pages after that were not received very well either. So I have not had, my confidence is shaken now. And look what's happened to me. And the committee, by the way. The committee is solidly with me. We have a business case presented to us very late in the session, which appears as though, and I'm not sure that that's the case, but it appears as though an 11th-hour document has been handed to us with very little time to respond to it. Now, whether that's true or not is unimportant. That's the perception we have. We also have an outside expert who has expertise beyond anything that any of us on the committee would have, telling us that this business case is flat. So we're now in my term. We now have a crisis in confidence. My confidence is shaken. Every member of my committee's confidence is shaken. It just so happened we had Representative Krupp from this committee there on that day. Now, I had the preview, and when Mr. Freeh stepped to the podium to give us the presentation, I asked him to step down. I said, until you can give us a plan and until you can give us a cost-to-savings ratio, don't go any further. The next morning, we got a plan, and I have to say that that plan, and I don't want to comment on the value of the plan, whether it's good or bad. That's not my job as a policymaker, but I had a plan. I can now go to the plan, and it is very detailed, and say, this is the day this is going to happen, and I can do the things that I wanted to do. I have to say that my question now is, why did I have to pull teeth to get that plan? Because the scope of the plan is excellent. I don't want to. The scope of the plan is what you would expect from a plan. I'm wondering why I had to pull teeth to get that plan. I'm wondering why it took so much work to get that plan delivered the very next day to every member of the committee, when perhaps we could have had it much earlier. I felt like I was participating in what we legislators call hide the ball. And so my confidence now in all the information I've received is really shaken. In fact, I wrote a letter. And I wrote a letter to Don, and I said, this is what I want. I want the cost-to-savings ratio. And I did get an answer to that letter. And some of the questions were answered very well. And since then, I've met with Lori and Don. And I think as a committee chair, I have come quite a ways. I have not been able to bring my committee with me. They have not been privy to the conversation and the growth that I've been allowed to experience. We did a full review. In fact, we sat in the room, and I did some things that we got a business case, and I looked at the dollars in savings and the cost of the plan, and there at the table did the math, and I said, this will take 13 years to pay out. Now, this is the time I had to look at that. I come into the room, I add up the costs, I divide by the savings, and I say 13 years, and I look up and down the table, and nobody's shaking their head, no. So I make some assumptions. They may be right, they may be wrong, but it's the information I had in front of me. 13-year payout in technology is way too long. Way too long. I want you to think back 13 years ago and what the technology was in cell phones, desktop computers, and even mainframes. So my confidence is not really restored. So I did another. We met again. We met several times. I asked Dallas for a budget note. I asked him in the morning. I got it 2 days, 3 days later, which troubled me also. Troubled me very much. I then I talked to Don and Lori, and we've come to a figure that we can agree on. And I have two different budget figures. I have one from Dallas. I have one of my. I got three. I got four. I got five. But I'm going to settle on the one that I gave you, because in order to have a budget note, I have to have the agreement of both the co-chairs. I went and visited with Co-Chair Schrader last night. In fact, I was there at 6:30, and I had that typed this morning. And basically, I used the figures that that Lori gave me, and I would like to unschedule, and it says on the budget note, $42 million. That's what I can get from the co-chairs, and I want that money unscheduled so that I get the reports. In the meantime, funny things happen, and those of you that have been in the legislature longer than me know that when you crack the ice, the water comes pouring. I get information every day, over the transit, under the door, in the box, some of it signed, some of it unsigned, some of it solicited, some of it unsolicited, and quite frankly, there's a mound of information that has to be gone through, and its validity first has to be determined, but in the time frame available, we can't do that. So I'm asking you to unschedule what the co-chairs will agree to, which is $42 million, so that we can get the answers. And I believe that's a figure that Lori and Don can agree to. And I'm going to ask you to do that. And if you have any questions for me, I'd be tickled to answer them.
Thank you very much for that eye-opening testimony. We appreciate that. Any questions of Chair Dallin?
Mr. Chair, I would like to say that I would concur with Representative Dallin's conclusions, having spent a fair amount of time visiting with the worker bees in IT that have come to us, we've talked to, who have brought particular technical issues having to do with the implementation plan of this project, which I raise huge flags to me personally. And I think it's appropriate for us to take a look at the methodology with how we are going to integrate these. It would be my hope that the JLCIMT would have the purview to be able to do that. And I want to say, and without being offensive in any way, the summary from Dallas here is pretty good, but I do dispute the second paragraph on page 2, where it says total one-time transition costs are budgeted at $43.6 million would be completely paid for by June 30, 2011. I strongly disagree with that, strongly, because the building cost of $20.6 million is not included in that figure. Had we not done Scenic, we would not have built that building. Bottom line. And so when you're trying to say that we, in fact, or this project is going to pay for itself through savings, you have to include the cost of that building. I don't think that's accurate. I strongly dispute that, and I want it on the record as such. I do not appreciate the fact that the argument has been made and people have accepted it in this building that you cannot count the full cost of this project. And you should. You have to. It is irresponsible business. I could never run my business that way, and I don't know too many that could. And the people that I've talked to outside this building that are involved in IT business agree with me. So I think this is an appropriate direction. I'm going to vote yes for the budget note. I have many misgivings about this project. I think there are a great amount of benefits that can come from consolidation. I'm convinced they are there. I am deeply concerned about the methodology in which we are going to implement this. And because of that, I think it's very appropriate that we go in the direction that we are with the budget note. And the JLCIMT have authority and have the ability to take a strong look and hold the agency accountable and the contractor accountable for how this project is integrated. And with that, Mr. Chair.
Would you mind just very quickly reading, Representative Krupp, the budget note that you and Chair Dallin came up with, so that way everyone in the audience hear that.
Mr. Chair, the Department of Administrative Services is directed to provide project updates to each meeting of the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, otherwise known as JLCIMT, and the Emergency Board. And what we're saying there, Mr. Chair, is that DAS has to give project updates to not only the committee, but also the E-Board. The project updates should include the status of the 12 agencies' consolidation efforts, compared to the project plan presented during the budget hearing. Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division is requested to unschedule $42.218 million other funds expenditure limitation pending request from the Emergency Board to reschedule the funds. Mr. Chairman, is the intent of the budget note is to provide the E-Board and the JLCIMT the look back or look over the shoulder provision before any further funds are released to complete the project.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chair Dallin, do you have any more questions or comments you want to share with us?
No, I think everything's been covered. There's a huge volume of information you don't have, but if you had any questions, I'd be willing to entertain them. I think you have an understanding of where we've been and what we're trying to do. I do have to say that the Scenic Project has other issues that would justify it in a moment, security alone. I would not want to not do this project. because of the other things. To me, the issue is confidence. And I'm probably a lot further along than my committee. I have committee members, and it is important that the legislature be made a partner in this process and not a stepchild. Thank you.
Just very quickly before we move to a vote, I would like to invite Ms. Warner to come up and get her thoughts on this budget note, and I'll share my thoughts on it.
Before we get into the budget note more,
the
last sentence of the budget note, I'm not sure if it's got a grammatical error in it or something that might affect the meaning. the words requested to unscheduled.
I can explain that. Every time, this obviously was crafted using Word, every time you put in the word on schedule, it adds the D.
So we just need to delete the D?
That is correct. Because the one I gave you, that's how it happened. And it didn't have the D in it when I gave it to you with the other number in it, Mr.
Maybe Chair. We can work that into the information management piece of the project.
I think you need to talk to
fix
the people
the
at Microsoft
D.
about that.
Thank you very much for that. As an English teacher, that really hurt.
Mrs. Warner, I assume you have a copy of the budget note.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Acting Director for Department of Administrative Services. I do have a copy of the budget note, and this is along the lines that Representative Dallin and I have discussed. We're aware of this, and we're supportive of this. We expected to have this project report in the interim to JLCIMT, and so that's not a particular issue, and the unscheduling of this amount works for us in terms of moving the project through the first phases here, and we welcome the dialogue and conversation about the progress of the project.
I want to thank Representative Dallin and Representative Krupp for the leadership they've provided on this issue. I think the critical analysis has been good. While not always easy, it's been good. And we would hope that as you continue to work through this project through the biennium, that you'll continue with the critical analysis and continue to keep the Joint Legislative Committee on Information and Management and Technology and the Emergency Board updated on your progress on this. And you know, this is a project where we all need to work together. I think all of us have the intent of trying to bring efficiency to government in the most effective and efficient way we can. I think if we can just continue to work together, continue each of us to critically analyze what we're doing for the benefit of the state of Oregon, it's to all of our benefit. And Dallas, I want to thank you for your work on this as well, and we hope you'll continue to critically analyze this the way you have as well. So with that, I think first we'll probably need to adopt the budget note, and then...
Mr. Chairman, I would so move the budget note as printed before us to be adopted for House Bill 5166.
Representative Krupp moves the budget note for House Bill 5166 with the correction of the striked out D on the word unscheduled on line three from the bottom. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved.
Chairman, I move House Bill 5166 as amended to the full committee with a due pass.
Okay. Representative Krupp moves House Bill 5166 as amended to the full House Budget Committee. The amendment includes the LFO recommendation. Any discussion?
Previously noted, my dissension regarding the LFO conclusion in paragraph 2 of the second page regarding the total one-time transition costs. I object to that for the record.
So noted. Any other discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved.
Not full with the due pass as amended.
Now we need a motion to move this to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5166 as amended to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Krupp moves House Bill 5166 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any dissension, any discussion? Seeing none, so moved.
Carrier.
I would be honored.
Thank you. And then I would ask on the floor if the two of you on the House floor could jointly carry this. Would that be all right?
Okay.
Thank you very much. And once again, before we move on, I would ask that each of us continue to critically analyze the work that we're doing and to make sure we're doing this for the benefit of all Oregonians. And I just want to thank you very much for your leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
So we're going to close our work session on House Bill 5166. Yeah, we're going to go back here now. We're going to open up our work session on House Bill 2107. Ms. Jordan, I think we've already gone through all of the work. We just need to move forward now.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we had a public hearing on this yesterday. I would just remind you that there is a fiscal impact, but it is already incorporated into the governor's recommended budget and doesn't require an amendment to this bill. So what we need is a motion to move approval of this bill to the committee.
So moved.
Representative Abaki moves House Bill 2107 to the full budget committee with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none. So moved. Congratulations. Thank you for the fine work you're doing and for allowing the process to work. So.
Okay.
We're going to close the work session on House Bill 2107, and we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 26. Which one do you want to go? 01?
We have testimony. We have people signed up to testify on 2601.
Let's go to 2601. Relating to general fund appropriation to Gresham. And we're going to take public testimony from Kathy Everett to begin with. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome
again.
Back.
Thank you. It's a privilege, Chairman and members of the committee. I'm just bringing back my comments from the previous from last week.
Perfect.
For record, and just to reiterate the importance of this project to our community. This is phase two of our renaissance in downtown Gresham. This project is a driving catalyst for the Center for the Arts is the driving catalyst for redevelopment for downtown Gresham. We were doing last night as a project about 9 o'clock at night over the phone looking at the overlay for our downtown plan and to see what this means for development for the businesses and developers. And our downtown plan is about 325 acres, and it looks like we have about 10% vacant lots in that area. And 10% of the area that has properties that have seen their economic life already. So we, as we were looking at it, we have about 20% of this downtown that is ready to be redeveloped right now. It's shovel ready, and it's near transit. So we're looking at 3.5 million square feet of redevelopable land that was looking, this catalyst will directly affect. Some of the investments are there. Some of them have been stagnant for many years, and it will draw new investors to the area. As I'd stated before, there's three critical elements in a downtown. The civic element, which we have in post offices, banks. We have the historic element. We are already the history of the downtown. The Center for the Arts is that third component that we've been missing for many years. So we really appreciate your consideration for helping to make Gresham the fourth largest city and the second largest city in the metro area a healthier Oregon.
That's pretty amazing to think about Gresham that size now. I remember when it was 12,000 where I lived outside of Gresham, right outside of Gresham, there was a story in the, I think it's the Outlook. Is that the paper, the
That's
Outlook?
Right.
Yeah. of a gentleman who shot a black bear off of his front porch, and today that area is a golf course. So
anyway. So we think we're at almost 100,000, and we did a design charrette last week in which we're projecting to be, in which we're looking at 150,000, not into the unforeseeable future. So,
Representative Abakian.
I'm sorry, but I don't remember what your position is.
I'm the executive director of the Gresham Downtown Development Association. So I represent approximately 150 property owners in the regional center, which is the downtown civic neighborhood.
Please.
Back when you first started coordinating the project for the Performing Arts Center, how helpful would it have been to the city, do you think, to be able to tap into certain funds that are available through the Economic Community Development Department, through the governor's office? You know, they have special funds for things like special public works projects. How helpful would it have been to be able to apply for grants or loans in order to start your project?
Well, extremely helpful, but I could probably defer to Ron here. Well, certainly.
When Ron gets back, we can pull him up.
Right.
I'd be curious about his opinion on that.
I'd like to add to that, Representative Abakian. The Special Public Works Fund, the way it's currently structured in statute, would be an ideal funding resource to complement, and I keep underlining the word complement, what we're trying to accomplish in this building for you. And I would strongly recommend, knowing the leadership you folks have in the Gresham area, with Speaker Minnis and Chair Lim of the Trade and Economic Development Committee and Senator Montes Anderson, who is very, very influential on the Senate side, to set up a meeting where we bring those partners all together and we sit down and help you. I know Chair Lim would be more than willing to sit in on that meeting, and I'd be more than willing to come and accompany him and help try and bring several of those agencies who have other funding sources to the table. And so I think in the near future, if there's a way you could work with Chair Lim on that, we would help. Thank you very much for your comments on that. Speaking of Chair Lim, would you mind just coming back up just really quick and sharing your thoughts on this? I have to tell you, for the record, we've always already had a public hearing on House Bill 2601, but because of Chair Lynn's leadership and Speaker Minnis's leadership, we've been directed to continue to keep this on the front burner. And so, once again, it goes to show the leadership of the three elected officials in your area. So. Chair Lim.
Well, thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is John Lim, representative of District 50, Gresham area. I'm very proud, Gresham resident, and representing Gresham. It is my great honor and privilege. And Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this bill again. And then not only keep this bill alive, but I hope you can have a work session sometime soon. So I was going to ask $3 million, but out of the consideration, I'm just asking $1 million.
If we wait another month, maybe it'll be down to $500,000.
We're stuck all now.
This is the least amount we'd like to get. And then with the $1 million investment, we are going to have hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars will be back to the not only Gresham area, to the whole the Portland and Oregon economy. And this is the good investment. The center is the future, not only is the current, but is the for the future generation. And the children after us, they will be greatly appreciated in the future that what we have, what we will have as our center located in Gresham. Our center simply located in Gresham, but it is for the Multnomah County residents, and it is for the Oregonian, and then plus from the Washington State, also many people will be visiting to the Columbia Gorge area. Certainly, they will drop in. And so this is part of the economic development. When we're talking about art, it is not just simply art. It is a job, an economy, and also it's good for the mental health. Nowadays, many people looking to get more money and higher jobs, but sometimes we neglect the art. And I think this is one of the best places in our state to locate our center in Gresham, and this will be beneficial not only in terms of jobs but in terms of mental attitude and then mental health. So I'm hoping that the members, the Chair Smith and members of the committee, hope to have a work session as soon as possible and pass it out, please. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, and I'm glad today we have several esteemed leading members of from Gresham area came here this morning, and with a one-day notice, they just came over here. That shows how important it is of this project. And sitting with me, the Ali Krenick, she's a student of Gresham High School, and she's volunteering today as an intern. So this is the first time I met her, and she, you want to say a few words on this issue?
Sure.
And before you say it, and you need to identify your name and who you are.
Oh, I'm Ellie Krenick. I'm a student and an intern here for the day. What I'd like to say is that Gresham, when you hear about their schools, you hear about their academics, their artistic talents, and I think if we have an art institute, one of these facilities, it would really be an outlet for these people's artistic aspirations. And not only would it look good for Gresham, but it would really help the people and make Gresham a better city, I think.
Thank you very much.
Just really quick, my understanding is that all of the artistic talent goes to Barlow High School. And aren't you concerned that this facility will be overutilized by Bruins but not Gophers? I'm just teasing. I'm an alumni of Barlow High School.
Well, Barlow's known for its athletics, not its artistic.
Oh. Here's the gamble.
You walked into that one, Mr. Chairman.
It is wonderful having you at the Capitol today. Thank you so much. If there's ever an opportunity for us to, any of us, to assist you as you're pursuing your internship opportunities, please feel free to notify us.
And I want you to know that how many young, talented people living in Gresham area, including this Ellie Krenick.
Now, before you step down, I have to clarify an urban myth of your home. Is it true that the bionic woman's mom was going to live in that home before you purchased it?
That's true.
It's not a myth.
Yes, it's not a myth. And my house is known as East Pit Up Mansion.
That's right.
I customize that.
That's right.
Okay.
he owns a beautiful home in Darling Park in Gresham, and our home was up the road and a ways. And I remember just as a young boy the myth that the bionic woman's mom was to live in that home.
So it's a beautiful house, and a stucco house, and a 7,000 square foot, 7-bedroom. So in case if you want to come on out, stay in my house, then you are welcome to this.
I can stay in the home of not only Senator Lim, but also the home that the bionic woman's mom almost purchased.
And big enough maybe for a performing arts center.
And big enough for a performing arts center.
In case things don't work out.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you. And we appreciate your leadership. I want to put on the record very quickly on behalf of Senator Monis Anderson. This came about with very, very quick notice. And I think I was delinquent in not notifying her. I know she strongly supports this project, and with a little bit of notice on my behalf, would have been here. And so I want to put that on the record, and please note her excuse for not being here, and that's on my shoulders. So with that, I'm going to ask Stan, is it Morris?
Yes, it is.
Please, come on up. Welcome. If you could just identify yourself for the record.
I will indeed. My name is Stan Morris, and I'd like to thank the chair and the members of the committee here today for having us back one more time. I was unfortunately involved in other matters the first time, but did submit some information in regards to the fact that Gresham, the plan for the whole region is supported. This helps support the planning that's been going on for many years. Now, since I've gotten a good idea of how this works, I must say I am a graduate of Bearden High School, and two daughters went to Barlow High School, and so
you're good.
I think we're a shoe-in here. I would like to point out that I served on the Gresham City Council from 72 to 80. And was involved in some of the land use decisions that were made, and particularly in transportation, again, that I referred to in a previous letter. But today I would like to just emphasize, as co-chair of the fundraising committee, which our goal is $14.8 million, which is a pretty good sum of money, how important this could be for us as we move forward in the public sector for raising funds. Also, I serve as chairman of MBank, which is a community bank based in Gresham, and can tell you that if we, the way this is a good leverage of money, this would be a great way to infuse $1 million into the community to raise an additional $14.8 million, and help the economic development of the entire region. And so I really encourage you to look at this as a way to help the entire region bring something to the community that is tremendously important. And also, historically, to tell you that in 1972, when I went on the Gresham City Council, there were approximately 6,500 people within the city limits of Gresham, and now we're pushing at 100,000, and of course the service area is significantly larger than that. What I would ask you to do today would be to envision 20 years from now the population and the number of people that will be served by the center of Gresham and the East Multnomah County cities, and say, is it important that we have a center for the arts? We have colleges, we have libraries, we have all of the things that make a community a whole community. But I think it's important to have something that says it's the center for the arts, to make that, to provide opportunities to people, and to make the livability of the community an important factor of why people move there. This $1 million amount could also help us move much closer to our ability then to reach the critical mass that we need to be at, so that we can approach the foundations that exist in the area that support the arts. And so with this effort, with the money that's been raised by the city, with about $1 million that's been raised within the community at this point, with this injection, and then continuing to work in the community to raise funds, we will reach that point at which we now can then go to the foundations and finished rounding off the money that will be necessary to make this a reality. So there's lots of good reasons, and you know them all, and you've seen them all, so I won't expand on any more of those, just to thank you for the opportunity to have a second hearing, and to remind you that I am a Beaverton High School graduate, and I did have two children and went to Barlow High School. Thank you.
Very quickly, as chair of a community bank, I'm hoping you'll take a leadership role in making sure that there's an operational plan for this project once it's constructed. as an economic development professional myself, one of the biggest struggles is not necessarily constructing the building or the facility, it's operating it once it's constructed, and I'm hoping you folks have that.
And there is, and we'd be happy to get that information to you. Okay.
Second thought, and I want to reiterate what was mentioned earlier on the record, the committee that's before you here not only deals with economic development issues, but we also deal with transportation issues, community development issues, and it has to do with infrastructure. I think this is the committee on the House side that works those issues, and I'd like to reiterate once again how important it is for you to bring what we call economic revitalization team together, which is made up of ODOT and Housing and Community Services, Economic and Community Development, all together to sit down and figure out what other funding sources they have available to complement what we're trying to do and what you're trying to do.
Yes.
And while I can't speak on behalf of Representative Avakian, I'd like to share that I think it's this committee's feeling that we'd hope all agencies would take a very hard look at their funding sources and how they can complement this project.
And we appreciate your advice in that regard very much.
Okay. Very much.
Any other questions?
Thank you. All right, we're going to go to Shane. Is it Bemis?
Yes.
Bemis. Welcome. So you can just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Smith, Representative Avakian, Shane Bemis, President of the Gresham City Council. Thank you for having us down again today. I was unfortunately unavailable to come down last time. I'm also the chair of the Gresham Centennial, 1905 to 2005. This is our 100-year celebration. So we really believe that the committee that was on the Centennial Committee really believed that this was the legacy project, the legacy that we would like to leave for the future generations. We also believe that many of my colleagues have already talked to you about the finer points of the facility, and just to reiterate a few points, we do have a downtown plan. We have one of the most beautiful main streets in any city in the state. We believe that this center would serve as a catalyst for revitalization all through our downtown core area. Any help, obviously, that you could give us would be much appreciated. And I would also say that as a gopher, I'm not so sure that the athletics of Barlow were superior, for the record. One of the things, Chair Smith, that you touched on was an operational plan. It is very important from the leadership of the city that that operational plan is in place. We have looked at that before we even really put together a fundraising committee. Can we make it sustainable? Is it something that the city bureaucracy should be involved in, or should it be a private entity? And the feeling is that it should probably be a private entity. So we're very aware of that. Again, we just think that this is we are right on the cusp of some great things in our city. We don't shoot black bears anymore. So the cultural, we're trying to prove that culture isn't something you find in a petri dish. So anyway, appreciate you hearing us, and anything you can do to help us in our endeavors would be greatly appreciated.
What year did you graduate?
91.
You're a kid.
Yeah, incidentally, I was born the year my colleague on the council stepped up to the council.
Ooh.
Right. Yeah. Now you two can go ride on the same car together. Thank you very much, Shane. Pam Baker. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Pam Baker and currently serve as campaign director for the Gresham Center for the Arts Project. I would just like to read into the record a letter received after we were here last time from Art and Yvonne Abrams. Art Abrams is the director of Art Abrams Swing Machine Big Band that is headquartered in Gresham. He is also an announcer for KMHD, the jazz station at Mount Hood Community College. And he says, "Dear Chairman Smith and members of the committee, in today's climate of budget cuts, it's very important to not overlook the importance of the humanities, arts, and music, which are an integral part of any American community. The Center for the Arts in Gresham will not only be a very important element for performing arts, but it will greatly benefit the surrounding community by increasing revenue for the businesses in the area. It will also become a landmark to be visited and attended by visitors from out of state, which can only enhance the positive reputation of this wonderful state of Oregon. We are proud to be part of Gresham's view of the future, and we urge you to support House Bill 2601 to help fund construction of the Center for the Arts. Sincerely, Art and Yvonne Abrams, who live in Estacada, Oregon." They really are symbolic or representative of many arts organizations and artists who look forward to having this professional venue to serve audiences in the East Metro and to perform their arts, from children in the schools who currently are learning drama and music and other performing arts, to have that professional venue in addition to their school venues, to arts organizations like the Gresham Little Theater, the organizations now headquartered in Portland like the Columbia Symphony that you heard from last time, and Body Vox Dance, and Northwest Children's Theater. Many of those have said, yes, you build it, we will come. And we will all work with you to help build audiences and make arts and culture more accessible to your community. And the Parks Department is planning to put classes for people for all ages into the center to make it tangible, not just a building, but a delivery of arts and culture learning and opportunity to the whole community. So I will give you copies of Mr. Abrams' letter, and we stand ready for questions if you have any. Otherwise, we just appreciate the opportunity for more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One thing I would ask is if somebody could just send me not a detailed map, but a map of where this is going to sit. I'm still struggling to visualize it. I can see Mount Hood, the movie theater. I don't know if it's still there.
It's one block north of the movie theater.
Okay, so behind it.
Yes, between 2nd and 3rd.
Got it.
And it's a two-block site, if you will, a two-acre site, so it's between Hood
but
and
what's
Kelly.
There currently?
It's an empty flat site that had been the school bus maintenance lot.
Got it.
And it's totally cleaned up by collaboration of the city and the state. It currently has just been leveled with topsoil and planted with grass to provide interim use of the site. And the Mount Hood Jazz Festival will hold a free concert in honor of the 100th birthday celebration this year. On that site, which will bring a lot of community focus to the site.
Now that makes a lot of sense with the development that's underway to take the busing facility that was there and probably have it relocated somewhere else other than in the heart of your city.
And it's that catalyst that where the owners of that site were enticed by members, leaders in the community to contribute the site to the city, and then the city worked to clean up the brownfield elements of it and make it available for this. So that's unique, whereas in Beaverton, I know Representative Avaki, and they still don't have a site to do something like this and would need to acquire very expensive land to make it happen in Beaverton, which I hope happens one of these days. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this very quickly? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 2601. Once again, thank you folks for coming down. We'd encourage you just to continue to work the building, if you will, to continue to generate support. And I hope as you folks leave that you'll thank Speaker Minnis and Senator Monis Anderson and Chair Lim for the leadership the three of them are providing on this project, because you truly are well represented by all three of them. So thank you very much. We're going to now open up a quick public hearing on House Bill 2348 relating to Lieutenant Governor. Chair Lim, you're back up. Yep. Welcome.
Chair Smith and members of the committee, that it is my great pleasure and privilege to be here again. For the record, my name is John Lin, a state representative, District 50. I believe that the, one of the important things we need to have in our state is Lieutenant Governor. I'm sure many of the legislators and people might disagree, but this is my firm belief. It's about time we need to have that the Lieutenant Governor in our state. Already 47 other states have Lieutenant Governor, and we don't, only Oregon and Wyoming and Arizona. Only three states, they don't have it. And could we say all of the 47 states were wrong and we three of the remaining states are right? And I don't think so. This is not a right and wrong issue. This is what is the right thing for the state. Especially Portland is a port state, depending on international trade. And we need to create this Lieutenant Governor. As you already know, that when we're creating the Lieutenant Governor, which we passed from the House, HJR 7, and the person will be in charge of already existing international trade division. So we don't have to spend any more tax dollars. When competing international trade, and the governor should be the person in charge, but many times the governor's plan, schedule already pre-committed. When the dignitary is coming out of a state, out of a country, sometimes governor is not available. In that cases, a lieutenant governor might be able to augment that situation. Already we do have elected officials in charge of labor issues. Already we have a public superintendent in charge of education. Already we have a treasurer in charge of state the fundings. Why not we have someone in charge of international trade? Our state depends on about 30% of the total economy on international trade, and chances are this trend will continue on. When I look back 30 years ago, our trade was only 10% of our total economy. After 30 years later now, we are having that the 30% of international trade presence here. So we are exporting our own product from our state, $11 to $12 billion at this time. And this will continue to be so. I think the creating the Lieutenant Governor, it's not simply expansion, more government, but it's expansion, more job, and more business opportunity. And then this House Bill 2348 is simply a companion bill. When people hopefully pass SJR 47, we need this companion bill, House Bill 2348, establishing the right and obligation of the Lieutenant Governor in the state of Oregon. So I'm ready to open any questions if you have.
No, thank you.
I just have one question. Of the other states that do have a Lieutenant Governor, how many of those have a strong governor, weak Lieutenant Governor, and how many have a strong Lieutenant Governor, weak governor?
Okay, I'm not sure what defines strong, but some other states that the Lieutenant Governor play a vital role. Most of the states having the Lieutenant Governor is the Senate, presiding the Senate. And the bill that the way I have written is not, and only in charge of a trade issue. Some of the states, like California, the Lieutenant Governor is one of the commission of that the economic development. Some of the states in charge of tourism and art and other advocacy commissions. Such as the California Lieutenant Governor is one of the powerful one. When the governor is out of state, Lieutenant Governor can sign the bill. So sometimes the governor is afraid to go out of country. And so it depends how we design it. and maybe a lieutenant governor roles might be increased in the future, even though at this moment, if this bill passes, in charge of international trade could be any other member of advocacy group. So I think it's a lieutenant governor's position is a unique, second in command. And then I have seen many people that the elected official dignitaries coming out of state, out of especially out of country, they consider it's a great honor meeting the governor. But the governor simply is not available. At least then we have a second person and might be able to greet them. And then if we don't put the lieutenant governor sometime in the near future, we will be less advantageous in competing in the trade issue throughout the nation.
So part of it's as much a cultural issue as we're dealing with dignitaries overseas.
Exactly. And simply the Secretary of State is the second person at this time, but Secretary of State is not the lieutenant governor. Some other state, the Secretary of State is a dual position, including the lieutenant governor and also the Secretary of State. Some other state lieutenant governor in charge of election, like the state of secretary here. So it all depends what we're talking about.
If I remember right, your bill has this as an elected position. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why did you choose it to be an elected position as opposed to an appointed one, since it carries such a specialized set of duties in international trade?
It could be appointed, but elected by the people give the person more prestige. Such like that the superintendent of public education, treasurer, and attorney general, and we have five statewide elected officers at this time. I believe lieutenant governor belongs to that category, and so that will be more powerful. And when governor appoint, the position is insecure, maybe politically motivated. Maybe governor might pick someone who can support the governor's position. But the lieutenant governor's position, even though it's, it should have a close working relationship with the governor, but the lieutenant governor should be an independent person. The way I have designed in the bill, lieutenant governor running as an independent, not as a partisan. Because in our state, we have about 23% people independent, and numbers are growing. So I thought that the electing lieutenant governor that independently might be a better fit the current political climate in our state and also nationally.
Because of the specialty nature of the position, would you be open to an amendment that would
but
have it as an appointed position of the governor?
I'm willing to any good amendment. At least that might be a good starting point. Currently, HJR 7, which we passed out from our house, is in the Rules Committee in the Senate. It is stuck in there. I talked to the Chair Brown, and then I haven't heard from her yet. So the fate of HJR 7 at this point, I'm not sure at this point. But in case if that passed out, I have more than enough votes in the Senate to pass the bill out. But in case if that passed out, then we need this HJR, HB 2348.
And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify, too, by me asking you the question about appointment versus election, I wasn't implying that it should be one or the other. I actually think your explanation of why you chose to have it as an elected position was a very reasonable explanation.
Thank you. And most of the state, I'm not sure any other state has a lieutenant governor's appointed position. I haven't found anyone yet.
Mr. Chairman, I would state that I don't favor that. I think the lieutenant general's position should be an elected position. I don't think it would be appropriate for it to be appointed, and I probably would not be favorable to that. I like the direction of Representative Lim's bill, the original HJR, and think that it has a lot of merit for a whole host of reasons. And my view is if we're going to pass 2348, it ought to be in its purest form. I'm not in favor of an appointment. I think the people ought to have the opportunity to elect someone who can act as lieutenant governor and can act as our, in essence, our trade ambassador when the governor cannot.
Okay.
And I think that's a very sound idea. I like the idea, and I'd like to see us go forward with it.
If I may express my sentiment, I don't believe Oregonians are not ready to have lieutenant governor at this time. And so if we pass out from the House and the Senate of the HR 7, and including the 2348, this is going to be uphill battle to give the information and education. And the first time, it is not likely to pass. But who knows? That's my current sentiment. But maybe at least we can try where we are in the statewide, the people's position on this issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate this bill again. Any other folks want to testify? Seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2348, and we are going to adjourn for the day. Thank you very much.
I think we should have-